Dublin.
Welcome everyone to Studio Soundtracks, the monthly program that takes listeners behind the scenes of making music for film and television. I'm your host, Chandler Poling. On the program today, I'm excited to welcome film composers Emily Levianez-Farouche and Alex Summers. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Chandler. Thank you.
Such a pleasure. Emily is the composer for H is for Hawk, a biological drama about a woman played by Claire Foy, who, after her father's sudden death, seeks solace in training a wild hawk she names Mabel. Alex co-composed the touching film Rental Family about an American actor played by Brendan Fraser, who takes a job working for a Japanese rental family agency where he pretends to be a husband, father, or friend to clients. Rental Family's co-composer is Yonzi of the band Sigur Rós, as a FYI. So both of your films tell the story around family, whether the loss of one or the creation of one. And I want to know, what does the theme of family mean to you individually? And we can start with Alex.
The theme of family is, I don't know, I think it's really expansive. And I think Rental Family taps into a really universal thing, whether you're really close with your family or you don't speak to them or they're gone. And I think I was 18 when I moved away from my hometown, and I really only go back once a year at Christmas, and I've always been really far away from my family. And I found it really easy to relate to both sides of the rental family thing, to people craving family without and people willing to show up to people without. And yeah, I don't know. It's strange for us being from the US where we don't have rental family services. Obviously, it's like kind of people laugh about it. Wow, that's interesting. That's weird. But I kind of get it and think it's really beautiful and really enjoyed learning about it throughout the process of working on rental family. And it kind of just like opened my eyes. And yeah, family is extremely important, whether it's people that you share your bloodline with or the people that you do holidays with and have into your home and share food and everything. And it was just a really cool experience to explore family from a new like cultural lens. Yeah, it was cool.
And I know that you got to bring your parents to the premiere of Rental Family in LA. So I think that was their first time you got to share that with your parents. How was that?
It was great. It was really, really cool. They so rarely come out to visit, and it just so happened they were here at that time. And they got to come, and they had never been to a film premiere, and it was really, really cool. And they were really touched by the story, and I think they were proud, and I was proud to have them there. And yeah, it was especially cool because of the rental family theme and Hikari, the director, and the Japanese presence, and the fact that the foreigner in the movie was kind of an out of place American. Yeah, it was just very special, and we all really enjoyed it, and I think they really got a kick out of it.
Wonderful, wonderful. What about you, Emily? What about the theme of family? What does it mean to you?
I think for me, family is a bit complicated. I mean, I'm also someone who lives far from home, but it's such a like a foundation of who we are, no matter how it's going, what our relationship with our parents, with our extended family, it still has a fundamental influence on our life. And on HS for Hawk, it is about the loss of a key family member, the loss of a parent, which is also something I have experienced. And yeah, no matter what your relationship to your parents are, it is worth exploring how those relationships shape you. And the loss of a parent is just a earth-shattering event. And what's always shocked me about this is it is unavoidable. We are all going to experience it. It is a key element of life. And I've always been surprised of how undiscussed and unprepared we are, unequipped we are to face this. I think we all don't want to think about it. And since my father passed away, I've thought about it a lot. And I think I've done maybe too many movies about grief, about losing a parent. I think because families can be such a complex situation, any movie that makes you feel seen in your relationship with your family makes you feel less alone, especially when that relationship is complicated, is a gift. Because we are in this impression that families are always supposed to be easy, that parents are here forever, then every time you deviate from that narrative, we feel very lost and very abnormal. But there are so many ways to have a family, and there's so many ways to interact with your families. And there are families that you create for yourself as you age. But it is one of those cases where representation and hearing about other people's experience can be such a like a magical support, and film can really do that.
Absolutely. In your careers as composers and storytellers, you are frequently telling the story of somebody else. So when you are doing that, are you, I guess, Emily, you kind of answered this question about drawing inspiration from your own experience and putting that into music, so to speak. I guess, Alex, we can have you answer that question or touch on that topic. Do you When you're scoring for other families, are you pulling from any personal experience in your life to accommodate that?
Of course, it's only personal experience. I think everyone has such a rich inner world. It's really difficult to really know what everyone's thinking and feeling about anything from the past, the present, feelings about the future. And we're so have so much more alike than apart. And I think even characters that are like really dark or really overly saccharine or whatever it is, whichever extreme. I think we kind of have that in us. And anytime I'm making music for a film and kind of scoring scenes and characters, narratives playing out, you always just are able to find music that can either kind of support what's happening or go against it in a way that's more revealing to the character, if that's the kind of approach, depending on what you and the director are excited to explore musically. But it's always there. It's always from your life. That's why it's important to, in our like actual lives, to stay open, to stay curious, to continue meeting new friends and continue to engage with the family, even when it's really difficult, and try to not check out and give up on life. Because I think if you do, that's probably when the music or the creative outlet, whatever you do, kind of dries up. But I think as long as you're really trying to be open and curious, like there's always music there, and there's always a way to have a thread to a character or story that doesn't necessarily something you've been through, but there is like a humanity in like all stories. And I think music is like a cool invisible thread that can be there for between you. And yeah, I don't have to work that hard to like try to put myself in I never really do that. I'm sure other composers do, but that's not kind of not my approach.
Is there a certain instrument that each of you associate with your families? Was there one in the household growing up? Was music kind of part of the family structure?
I mean, my grandmother had the piano and she played the cello. I think my mom used to always play classical music around the house on the Sunday. That would be the sound that would wake me up, and she sings a lot for pleasure. But yeah, so I'm not sure. I think piano probably would be associated with my family. And it's also the instrument, just having my grandmother spending a bit of time showing me the basics when I was a kid, there was very cherished memories that she would, the piano was normally locked, but having her unlocking the instrument and opening it up and like showing me, it felt very, very special, like a little secret, a little treasure she would pass on to me. So that would be the one.
Is the piano still in your family?
Yes, it is with my uncle and aunties, but it is in France, sadly. Maybe one
So
day.
beautiful. It's okay. Yeah, I'm always curious if those, because that's such a generational thing that gets handed down, and whether the family wants it or not, there's often some sort of piano, guitar, or something that kind of continues on. But Alex, what about you? What instrument do you associate with your family?
It's not an instrument, but I would just say like listening. There's a lot of Beatles in my household growing up, and like great music like that. And I remember from a really young age, before I started playing instruments and playing music, of like my parents like harmonizing to the music, like not singing the lead vocal melody, but like a different note that somehow paired with it. And like my very young listening ears, like recognizing that and not having the language for it, but being like, oh, that's like cool. And then trying to learn how to do that myself. So I would maybe even just say like voice, or like listening to music and engaging with it on like a pre-instrument level, is the most like vivid, strong thing that I now think like really influenced me actually. Like when I listen to music, whether it's works in progress I'm working on or just random music in the world, I always hear harmonies to it. And it's like so fun, and I love that. And maybe a lot of musical people do that. You're constantly harmonizing to music. You're having a conversation, I'm harmonizing to the music in my head. And I think that came from unlocking that part of me from a young age with like Beatles CDs and my parents. And I'm really grateful for that, because it's like it translates to anything. It's not instrument specific. And I think that's a lot of the way I like to hear the world or something.
Wonderful. At the top of the show, we heard the track Found Family from Rental Family by Alex and Yunzi. And Alex, I was wondering if you could talk about the direction you were given from your director Hikari when scoring this film.
Yes, Hikari is such an amazing, colorful, like big character who has lots of ideas around family. I mean, she left Japan. She grew up in Japan and left, I believe, at 18, around 18 to 20, and came to the USA. She was kind of foreigner in a foreign land. There's a lot of her in the story, of course. She co-wrote it with Stephen Blahut. And I think the direction she wanted to give us was to not be cheesy. It's a very heartwarming story. It's a lot of like touching moments. And if the music is a little bit too saccharine and like too clean and too like buttoned up, yeah, we never want it to feel like that. It's like still really scary and vulnerable what these people are going through. And there's always like a strange component to it, these like hired people. So we really wanted the instruments to kind of have character and soul and grit. So we kind of wrote most of the music on kind of like weird antique-y instruments that were kind of crusty and dubbing sounds to cassettes and like trying to keep that in mind. So even if there was something genuinely touching of like two strangers having a moment, it never felt like too movie music. And I think she encouraged us to explore that and we wanted to explore that. So that was like one, you know, there's several things that you arrive at while you're scoring a film and figuring out, but that was like one early overall principle that I think we all wanted to keep in mind.
And you co-scored this with Yonsei, as I said earlier, and I know you've collaborated in the past with your album Rice Boy Sleeps back in 2009. So I'm just curious, how has your kind of collaboration with Yonsei changed over the years?
Gosh, I loved making this music with Yonsei. It was so fun. And it was the first time we did a co-score in about a decade. And we've made so much music together over the years. We've made artwork. We've traveled the world. You know, we shared a life together for like 16 years. And now we're both neighbors here in Los Angeles. And I don't know, honestly, in a way, it like hasn't changed our work. Like it's more structured now because when back in the day when we were making music, there was no ambition. We were just making something for pure fun. We'd have field recordings, we'd bring it home, we'd loop it in the living room, we'd start playing something. It was just very like pure fun, homemade music that became something. But now it was more structured, you know. So we've booked time in a recording studio. He would come to my home studio, I would go to his. But it's really the same thing of not saying a lot. Just one of us starts playing something, the other plays with it. And then ideally within 30 seconds, you have something good. And I'm really slow and patient. Yonsei is really fast, spontaneous, and impatient. So it's really funny. Like I sometimes think he has something good and I have to make sure he doesn't just get up and never play it ever again. And he's really bored when I'm playing the same thing for 35 minutes straight. And he like, you know, will harmonize and get it to the next level. But kind of think the answer is our collaboration hasn't changed. We're just like a little older, a little weirder, and have to create more structure in our collaboration than just like looping something in the living room for 3 days and gradually building a piece of music. It's not that free anymore, like untethered to reality. But it was really fun, and he's an absolute like powerful creature when it comes to music, and he has so much music in him, and with, you know, vocal stuff and playing, and his sense of melody and harmony was just so fun. And it was a really cool collaboration. We loved it.
Awesome, wonderful. Well, I'm going to play another track from Rental Family. This is a track called Window Weather. Emily, I want to start talking to you about H is for Hawk. I'm curious. Now, this is such a generic question, but I always love the answer is when you were creating the score, did it go through any transitions as you were creating it? And was it going in one direction and you realized it wasn't working and you decided to try another thing? And I'm always curious about the kind of behind the scenes discussion on that.
I mean, on this film, we really had that actually, because I read the book years and years ago, and I spoke to Philippa for the first time about it about like 7 months before they started filming, when they were still at script. So I think we started thinking about the score before we saw any of the footage. And we kind of thought we'll keep it very small, very intimate, very internal into Helen's psyche, basically. And yeah, we were planning around this kind of five instrument maximum, something really small. And then we started seeing the footage of the hawks hunting. And basically the way they filmed is they had five different hawks, and two of them were trained from a very young age to be very comfortable having drones. Filming drones flying with them, which create this just incredible footage where you really can see the physicality of the birds. Are they flying so fast and so low to the ground? You can even see like their shoulders moving when they're trying to get in between trees and things like that. And I think once we started seeing the scale of it, the intensity of it, and the beauty of nature, it just felt like we needed to expand the sound of the score to kind of capture the just sheer joyfulness that Helen would feel seeing this, being at one with this. So yeah, all of a sudden we were for 12 strings, piano, electronics, just the sound bloomed from seeing the images quite substantially actually. And thankfully Plan B supported us with this. But yeah.
That's
Cool.
always so fun, yeah, to hear how that happens. Claire Foy's performance, it's stunning in the film. She's incredible. Do you ever feel yourself connecting with an actor on screen, and like even when you're watching a scene over and over and over again, and you're working on a film, is there something about that moment of their performance that it's still, fresh every time you watch it?
Yeah. I think it's probably the same for Alex, but I think we all have at least a few scenes that are kind of the reason we love the film so much. There's just moments in those performances where we see a person and we understand this person so deeply, and we see ourselves reflected in that person in a way that feels so real, that emotion we feel every time, I think is. To me, those performances are the source of the music we write, because the emotion they give is nourishing us, and what we receive from it allow us to give again. So yeah, there are a few moments, especially Claire. She's got just the she's doing it all through our eyes. There's moments you can see the emotion in our eyes in a way that's so easy for me to understand that. Yeah, there are a few scenes. If I just let myself get into the scene without trying to think about what am I supposed to write, and I just sit back for a second and let myself be absorbed in her performance, it will immediately and every time bring me to tears.
Are you ever surprised then when you add music to those moments and it makes it better, so to speak? It's so I always find that so fascinating when you watch a scene without the music and it's so strong, and then you can just add even subtle music, but even just that element, and then it notches it up even higher.
Yeah, I think I often, actually, not always, obviously, sometimes you're going to have a cue that's been ongoing before that moment arrives, but I love leaving a little bit of space at that moment of pure emotion from the performance, because I love feeling like the audience can react to that emotion and that I'm just here to kind of accompany the emotion so that they can really feel that it's coming from them rather than us in any way, shape, or form manipulating the emotion. So I tend to like hold back when there's a beautiful performance and just let it speak for itself.
Wow, that's so cool. I feel like so many composers feel the same way. We love when movies aren't overly dense with music. It's just kind of, I think, because we think of music as has such a strong like value or something to us. We love music. And it is very cool when movies have less music and they do show restraint in moments where it could otherwise like mega soar, you know, like I also really appreciate that when I'm watching movies and it doesn't happen. And sometimes the connections to the characters and the stories can be deeper. I think you were right what you said. Yeah, maybe I'd never thought of it that way, but maybe it's more like happening inside of you or something when there's not like overly hit with it. But yeah, it's hard to convince people to experiment with that because so many movies do the extra thing so well that we're also conditioned to seeing and hearing and feeling that. So it is a little bit brave to pull back, but can be really rewarding.
Yeah, well, I want to play a track from H is for Hawk. This is a track titled Feathers. Before I hit play, I just would love for you to set us up a little bit about this moment. Obviously, it's full of m movement and emotion and kind of playing upon an answer earlier about adding more to the film because I imagine the movement of the birds is just so beautiful. But yeah, could you just set us up a little bit for this cue?
So this cue is playing in the opening titles of the film. And there's a variation of this cue shortly after. And for me, it was a way to establish her life before the grief. So it is kind of showing her a state of mind before anything terrible happens, but also sh showing how much she feels supported, how much love there is in her life, how much life there is in her life, and kind of portraying her as this generally pretty happy person who has a strong connection with her father. And it's a baseline that then gets disrupted by one phone call. But I thought it would be more interesting to have this kind of structure where we start with something quite joyful rather than preemptively being mournful or preemptively being reflective, but just more showing what she is set to lose than what the movie's about.
Wonderful. Well, here is the piece Feathers from H is for Hawk.
Thank you.
Emily, I'm going to stay with you just because you also worked on a film called All of Us Strangers in 2023. And, curious enough, I love that you brought a track from that film to the show today. And I just want to know, what does that film mean to you as a composer?
Oh, it's very, I love that experience. I mean, the whole team, I think everyone on this film cared so much about this story and believed in it and was so willing to give so much of ourselves and our truest self as well to show who we are through our work. From the actors to, editors, director, everyone was being so truthful. And yet it was a process that was also so much fun because Andrew Haig is a very funny man. And yeah, I had the most wonderful experience making the film. And there was just no ego involved. There was just love for the project, love for the story. And then when the film came out, it was truly one of those project when the way people spoke to us after screenings, it's just one of those experiences where you really understand what movie, what's the human value of films, how much it can mean in people's life, how seen they can be, and the importance of being seen when you are in loneliness or where you can feel a bit isolated. And that's just really reinforced to me the deep human value of cinema, just outside entertainment, outside anything like that. At the core, there is this connection that it can bring.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, let's hear that track. This is a track called Diner from All of Us Strangers. Alex, you also brought a track from another film of your work from the film Nickel Boys. And so I really want to talk about what this film means to you and why you selected the track Bees Buzzing in particular. I'm very curious.
Thank you. Nickel Boys was an incredibly special project for me. Romel Ross, the filmmaker, he's an absolute true artist. He's such an interesting person. I still feel like I want to keep getting to know him better, and I really hope we do. We've worked on two films together now, and he's just such like an outsider. He's not like a career film industry person. He's like teaching full time at Brown. He goes on like sabbaticals and does these incredibly beautiful photography books. He's had art exhibitions at like blue chip galleries in New York City. He's like just a really cool person, has a lot of like creativity within him, and it comes out in different forms. And Nickel Boys was an adaptation of a really beautiful novel. And yeah, he made this movie where you're the camera is the point of view of the character the whole time. So it's kind of dizzying and strange. And it's like a really bold idea. And I just love the way he played with perspective and, really commenting on just being a black person in the USA in the 60s. And it's just like has collage, has archival footage, has like strange sound design, has strange music. And for me, it was just like a dream to be a part of that because the music he wanted to tell the story didn't ever need to make sense. It was like the least sensical music I've ever made. And it was incredibly fun to be encouraged in that direction because usually composers want to like not make sense and try weird stuff and like kind of break the seams of film music. But it's hard to do it because you can't just like have something on screen that doesn't make sense. And for Nickel Boys, we could do anything. Nothing made sense. Have fan field recordings of like fans whirling in a scene. There's no fans. Field recordings of weird frogs in a swamp slowed down. There's no frogs on the screen. It's just like, but we were like conjuring a feeling of like how these characters, what they were going, this horror show of what they were going through. It's a very dark movie and it's really upsetting to watch. It's all based on truth. And I think to having the sonic like chance to be like so outside the box sonically is so much where my heart's at with music. I love simple music as far as the notes, but I like really far out music as far as the sonics of it and the arrangement of it. So that was a dream. I love Nickel Boys. It was really special. Very lucky.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, here is that track. Here is Bees Buzzing. I'm curious, what is a film that you have scored that you wish more people could watch? Emily, we can start with you.
That's a good question. Oh, I'm not sure. I mean, I think a lot of people should watch Rocks, because it's just such a lovely, and there's not even that much score in it, so it's not necessarily for my score, but it's just such a lovely portrayal that encouraged so much empathy for young people and shows London its all its cultural diversity and shows really wonderful female friendships. And yeah, I think it's just a beautiful story. The process of making it, like all the young actresses were involved in the film for like over a year and helped develop the script. And yeah, I just think it's just so full of life and so full of joy and so full of the truth of, growing up and being a teenage girl and being a teenage girl going through challenges that many people will not get to experience. And if it can, encourage empathy for people who don't look like us and don't have the same upbringing as us, and then yeah, I really want people to watch this film if they can find it.
Wonderful. What about you, Alex? What's a film you worked on you wish more people could see?
I think I might have to select a movie called Dawson City, Frozen Time. It's like a really strange, I guess it would be filed under documentary. But there's a filmmaker in New York named Bill Morrison, and he's a really cool person, and he has a relationship with the Library of Congress, and they have a shelf there just for Bill, and he makes all his movies. Everything he's ever made was made from archival footage. So he gets various found footage through the ages and takes it and then makes something new from it. So with Dawson City, it was this town called Dawson City in northern Canada, found hundreds of films buried in the tundra by accident. They were like digging a hockey rink or something in 1970-ish. And then it was sent to the Library of Congress and they offered it to Bill, and he made this really strange movie from all these found footage. And he kind of was able to weave his own narrative, but it's a silent movie with text narration. And it's exactly 2 hours long. And it was just like a really massive undertaking to make 2 hours straight music. And it's just a really far out weird movie of black and white, crusty old found footage with music. And I think Bill's an interesting filmmaker who is kind of, he's a for lifer, he'll be doing it forever. And I hope more people can be familiar with his work.
Wonderful. Well, the last question I have for you guys is what was the first album you purchased and what was the last thing you listened to? Emily, of course, has answered this question already. So we'll start with Alex. And Emily, you can think of maybe a second or s another early album of your life. But Alex, first album you purchased, last thing you listened to?
Oh, it's such a great question. First album I purchased, I remember having some cassettes and CDs. I can't think of the very first one ever. I remember there was like that one hit wonder from this like guy rapping. Oh, it'd be so embarrassing to try to do it. But was his name Snow? Do you remember this like weird 90s one hit wonder? I had like really bad, like childhood stuff, like cassettes. And I remember actually with my own money, probably got some like birthday money from a grandparent buying Nirvana In Utero on CD. That's like actually cool and I'm proud of that. But I feel like there was purchases before that, but they're just like Ugly Kid Joe or like random CDs and cassette that I can't say which one was very first.
That's okay.
And the last thing I listened to almost every single morning when I wake up, my brother made a record in like 2004-ish, and it's really, really beautiful. And I kind of listen to it every day. It makes me sound like a psycho, but I have like a speaker in every room in my house, and I keep the volume like really, really low, so it's kind of just barely there, but it creates a really nice feeling in the space. So I usually put on that album that he made almost every single day for many years. So that's the last thing I've heard from now.
All right, what about you, Emily?
I also had a lot of cassette. I can't remember which one I mentioned last time. Probably was MC Hammer, which is not cool. I mean, Which one I purchased with my own money? I was probably either homogenic, I would say, probably. I mean, as a teenager, I probably had other uncool stuff before. But yeah, Björk Homogenic was probably the
Love
first one
that.
I bought as like someone who wasn't influenced by other people, but just like, this sounds cool, this looks cool, I want to buy it because I want to listen to it properly. And then the last thing I listened to, I mean, I did listen to the two songs by Charli XCX for Wuthering Heights on repeat recently, just like again. Oh yes, especially that house one, because it's just such an unusual, like that's the type of sound, you know, like industrial or something like Law or some, you know, and just having John Cale just playing the viola in unearthly ways on a pop track. It's just amazing. It was so
Crazy.
unexpected.
Yeah, I can't believe
So
she made a song with John Cale. Like, it's
this
so
is so cool.
surprising. Yeah, wild.
And
Well,
just, you
one.
know, the bold, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just the boldness of the track, the fact that it just
Yeah.
starts with a full monologue by him. Yeah, it's just very refreshing to see a pop star which just doesn't stop herself and tries everything. It's really cool.
Really. And she's done some really cool, like, distorted stuff over the years. A few of my good friends write songs with Charlie, and I feel like she hasn't shied away from, like, brutal distortion and weird sound design moments woven into, like, super pop, which I've always thought was so cool. She's amazing.
I want to thank you both so much for joining me on Studio Soundtracks only on DubLab Radio. Listeners can find the soundtrack to Rental Family on streaming platforms, and H is for Hawk is coming out later this year. And I encourage everybody to check out both of these films. They're both wonderful. We have an outro music, which is another piece from H is for Hawk by Emily. It's called Call You Mabel. So make sure you stick around, listen to that track on our way out, and I want to thank you both so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you.
Thank
It's
you for
really
having us.
lovely. It's really lovely.